Hello, hello, and welcome to Art House Garage, the snob-free film podcast where we make art house, indie, classic, and foreign cinema accessible to the masses. I'm your host, Andrew Swetman, and today on the show, we have a discussion of the new film, Bodies, 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 starring Amanda Stenberg, Maria Bakalova, Rachel Sinnott, and Pete Davidson. Arkansas film critic Jordan Woodson joins the show to help us break down the film. Stick around. If you're enjoying the podcast, don't forget to check out our Patreon. If you subscribe today, you get ad-free episodes, bonus episodes, extended and uncut episodes, and video episodes. In addition to all that, get a merch discount at our web store. We have some great shirts, including one that says, "Cinema is Spiritual," and another that says, "Watch Old Movies." And it's not just shirts, you can get that design on a coffee mug, on a tote bag, just about anything. You can check out the web store and the Patreon in the show notes to this episode. All right, back to the show. You're listening to Art House Garage. One quick note, you may notice on this episode that my voice sounds just a little funny. I've had a little bit of a sore throat and cough. I have tested negative for COVID, so I don't think it's that. But my voice does sound just a little off for that reason. All right, back to the show. The new A24 film is a mystery comedy called Bodies, Bodies, Bodies. It's a film I've been looking forward to for some time, ever since I saw the first trailer depicting a group of buzzy Gen Z actors having wild parties and seemingly murdering each other. What's not to like? The film stars Amanda Stenberg as Sophie and Maria Bakalova as Bea. They are a romantic couple who is joining this group at a huge mansion, and we learn early in the film they are hunkering down to wait out a hurricane. So a storm is coming, there's a lot of drugs and alcohol in the house, and we also learn quite quickly that there's a lot of tension between different characters, and those things come more and more into focus as the film goes on. They begin to play a game called Bodies, 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 which is a party game, kind of like Mafia, in which one person is designated as the killer, and then it's a murder mystery game. And then, of course, in the movie, someone dies for real. What unfolds is not only thrilling, but hilarious. There ends up being a ton of satire about Gen Z culture, the way younger generations speak to each other, the types of things they say, the fact that they're always on their phones. There's all kinds of interesting and creative things brought into this really clever script. So as soon as I saw the first trailer, I knew I wanted to podcast about it, and I was only more excited to do so when I actually saw the film. We do keep this discussion spoiler-free for the first maybe half or so, and we'll give a spoiler warning before we divulge any details about the film's ending, but I did feel we had to discuss spoilers to fully and adequately dig into this film. My guest today is Jordan Woodson. He's a film critic based here in Central Arkansas, just like me. Jordan writes for The Log Cabin Democrat. He's a reporter there as well as their film critic, and he also publishes his reviews on his movie website. I will link to both The Log Cabin Democrat and Jordan's personal blog in the show notes to this episode. Also, make sure to follow Jordan on Twitter. I'll link that as well. They're really active, and I love seeing their opinions on film and all kinds of other things, too. I've been following Jordan for a while, so excited to finally get them on the show. And so without further ado, here is my discussion with Jordan Woodson about the new film, Bodies, Bodies, Bodies. A
record plus. You don't have to be nervous.
I'm not nervous.
Wow, they're all so impressive.
You're impressive. They're gonna be obsessed with you. I just wanna feel good. They're not as nihilistic as they look on the internet.
You guys, this is B.
Oh. Whoa.
This is your first relationship?
Oh no.
You just kind of give that vibe.
Oh, you know that has weed in it, right?
Who wants to play Bodies, Bodies, Bodies?
So how do you play?
If you draw the piece of paper that has the X on it,
you are the murderer.
Let's go. Cool. And if you're the murderer, you have to kill someone by touching them on the back.
The most important part, if you come across a body, you have to yell,
"Body, body, body!" Wow.
Is that the lights? Our friend is dead.
I'm a hot girl, I'm a hot girl.
Someone's doing this. They're trying to kill us off one by one.
That would be so obvious if I were the killer.
Taking off my clothes in the window for the neighbor.
Where are you?
Hot girl.
How long have you known her?
What are you talking about?
Jordan, what are you doing?
I'm staying safe.
Really? Because it looks like you're grabbing a meat cleaver to go look for my boyfriend.
You just watch your girl.
You pushed her! Liar!
You just want to be me.
What is happening?
That all you got, mother?
I brought something.
What is it?
It's zucchini bread.
Yum.
I'm a hot girl, pop girl, rich girl, I'm a girl, fast girl, catch me if you can.
Welcome to the podcast, Jordan Woodson. Thanks so much for being here. How are you?
Thanks for having me. I'm good.
Yeah, I've followed you on Twitter for a while and love seeing your things you're tweeting out and your movie opinions and hot takes and all that. So I'm glad to have you on the show finally. And yeah, we live pretty close to each other here in Central Arkansas, so good connection to have. But yeah, with and I'm glad we're talking about this movie. We're going to talk about Bodies, 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 which is the new A24 film. So my first question for you about this movie is, were you pretty excited for this movie, anticipating it a lot, or was it just another thing? Okay, I'm going to watch this and review it. Or was one you had some hype around?
Yeah. So like coming out of where it premiered at South by Southwest, I had people like telling me directly, like, this is a movie that you're going to like. Mm-hmm. Like, this is made for you. Come a huge whodunit fan. Like, nice. Clue is tied for my favorite movie of all time. I love Knives Out. I'm like admittedly a fan of Kenneth Branagh's Agatha Christie movie. So like whodunits are like my genre. So people knew that's great. I would like this. So I did have like pretty high expectations going in.
That's amazing to hear. So I didn't know that about you. I think one of the first things I asked you on Twitter was, hey, if you ever come on the show, what kind of movie would you like to do? And you mentioned Knives Out 2 would be a good one, yeah. Which I still have you down dibs for that one whenever they announce that date. But I didn't know like you're into whodunits. That's great. I described when I was telling my wife about this movie, like, okay, it's, you know, imagine the setup of Clue, but we've got all this Gen Z satire and it's a, you know, a little more grounded than that. But that's a movie she really likes. Well, cool. Well, I guess the next question is, did this generally, we're going to get into all the details of the answer to this question, but in a general way, did this live up to the hype for you or not?
Mostly, yeah. I think I kind of went into with admittedly a little bit too high expectations, but like, I mean, I gave it a 4 on Letterboxd, 4 stars on Letterboxd. So like,
nice.
Yeah, I really liked this movie.
Yeah, I agree. I wouldn't say that like whodunit is one of my favorite genres, although I do, and I really like horror comedies more and more. I think that's like when those two tones kind of coexist, that's fun. And I get pretty excited about any A24 release, really. They tend to have quality that I enjoy. So yeah, I was pretty excited for this. And yeah, for me, it pretty much lived up to it as well. I have a few qualms here and there that we'll get into, but talking about this as a sort of a horror comedy, how well did the horror aspects of this film work? And I guess along with that, sort of the mystery whodunit parts of it. I'm so glad to know that you're really into whodunits, because that's one thing that I wanted to ask is like, did the mystery part of it work? So I guess the horror and the mystery, how well do those aspects work for you?
I guess the horror, to me, it wasn't very much like a horror movie as much. Mm-hmm. Like if I went into this, like not knowing anything, not seeing trailers, I don't think I would ever really describe it as horror. Like there's definitely some horror elements there, but like I think a lot of people are referring to it as a slasher. I think it's a very loose definition of a slasher. Mm-hmm. It'd be kind of like if you called Clue a slasher.
Yeah, I think that's a good call. I had an idea that it was more of a horror movie, I guess, from trailers. I think I'd seen it described as a horror comedy, but yeah, I did find it a few moments were a bit frightening, but generally it was more, I guess, more of a thriller or something, and it pushed the comedy and satire forward.
I guess
more.
With the like storm hurricane outside and the movie basically just like being lit by only phone cameras and then different like glow stick necklaces. Those kind of give off with the darkness kind of horror vibes and the thunder outside, but other than that, not much horror to it. I think if you were to tell like a horror fan this is a horror movie, they may be disappointed of it.
Yeah.
But like if you tell them it's a satirical whodunit comedy with some darker elements, then that's the expectation you should have going in.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's right on. Yeah. And yeah, you know, I like what you said about it sort of being a slasher loosely. But yeah, it really is. I guess going into it, I wasn't sure how much of each of those things was going to be present. But yeah, it ended up being less scary and more with those other elements. Well, yeah, what about the mystery part? So I felt like, and with a good whodunit, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but one thing I always look for in that is, am I successfully along for the ride, and am I questioning each person's motives to the degree that it seems like the movie wants me to? Like, do I really have a moment where I think, oh, it could be them? Does it kind of fool me in that way? And what did you think about that for this film?
I think at some point I was questioning each and every person, including another character who doesn't show up, and like the guy referred to him off camera all the time. But yeah, I think I pretty much suspected everyone at some point. Yeah. And I think that's a good recipe for a good whodunit.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree. There was, and so we'll get into spoilers in the end. We're not going to spoil anything yet, but there was a sort of, I don't want to say any too much actually, because I don't want to spoil it. But yeah, same. Like at certain points, I really did question even the characters who I thought I would never, like from the beginning, we meet first Sophie and B, and B is sort of our way into the story. Like she's not really part of this world, but then at certain points, the other characters question her motive, and so did I. And I was like, maybe there's something to it. So yeah, I agree. It really, I was along for the ride with it, and it really kept me guessing. And again, we'll talk about the ending and whether I predicted anything correctly in a minute once we get into spoilers. Let's talk about the performances. Was there any standout performer among these? And I'll list them really quick. We have Amanda Stenberg as Sophie, Maria Bakalova as B, Rachel Sennott as Alice, Pete Davidson as David, Myhala Harold as Jordan, Lee Pace as Greg, and Chase Suey Wonders as Emma. So pretty small cast, but each character has a lot to do. And then there's the character that you mentioned earlier that's mentioned a few times, but is not seen for most of the movie. Yeah, was there a standout for you, how did you feel generally about the performers in this?
I think Rachel Senna is probably my favorite performance in this. I think she is most of the comedy in the film. She is kind of the more, they're all kind of like out there characters, but she's probably the most outlandish and over the top. And I think she nails it really well.
Yeah, I completely agree. She's my answer as well. Like so I know her from Shiva Baby last year or 2 years ago, whenever that came out. And she's so good in that too. And I think she can find the comedy in being really uncomfortable. Like in Shiva Baby, there's so many close-ups of her, like just the most cringy kind of moments where like she's going through horribly awkward things in that movie. And in this, you know, she's like screaming and scared. And at certain points when there's confrontation is really put through a lot of psychological turmoil. And she really makes that funny to watch. That's an interesting kind of trend in her career so far, is like she's just a really good actor. Yeah, and she's I want to say over the top in a way, but it never is too much, I think. But she probably is the biggest performance in it. And and that's just like her personality, I guess, her character's personality. But yeah, really, really fantastic and very funny, I think.
I think the scene with the gun is probably like she nails it so well.
Yeah, I was going to mention later when we talk about kind of favorite moments, but that scene, there's a lot of jokes about podcasting. As a podcaster, I thought that was so funny.
I was thinking about you during those scenes. Like, I know we'll be talking on podcasts about this.
Because they kind of mentioned at the beginning, I love your podcast. And it's sort of like a joke, like, okay, I roll, this person has a podcast. And then later they kind of push her about it and find out one character has hate listening to her podcast and all that. And she's like, it's really hard. You have to make a Google calendar. It's like, she goes into it. Yeah. I thought that was hilarious. I was rolling. I thought she was great. Maria Bakalova, I think, is super good too. Who I had only seen before in Borat 2, which is probably where most people have seen her as Borat's daughter in that film.
I haven't seen Borat 2, but I've seen Judd Apatow's Bubble. So I had like a completely different introduction to her than most people. So.
Interesting. Yeah. I have not seen that film, so I don't know what she's
you
like.
Probably shouldn't.
Yeah, that's kind of what I've heard. Yeah, she's a little bit like timid in this. And yeah, again, she's kind of the way in, but I for the audience, because she's is the outsider in a way. But yeah, I thought she was great. Yeah, I kind of nailed that tone of uncomfortable around these people, but trying to, you know, do her best with her girlfriend here and all of that. Have you seen Amanda Stenberg in anything before? She plays Sophie.
Yeah, I mean, she was Rue in The Hunger Games. She was in in The Hate U Give.
Yeah,
I forgot she was in Hunger Games. She was just in Dear Evan Hansen.
That's right. She's just in. Yeah, I forgot that too. I was thinking about The Hate U Give, but I should have checked her page more thoroughly. But I've seen her other things too. But
she also in this YA movie like a few years ago called Everything Everything. So yeah, I've seen her in a few stuff.
Yeah. Well, comparing this to The Hate U Give was my what I was going to bring up, but I guess I've seen her in other stuff too. Just it was something different from her, but I think she did a really good job. I like her in The Hate U Give, you know, as for what that movie is, and I think she does a really great job kind of holding that. But this is such a different performance from her. But I think she just holds the screen really well and is kind of magnetic. I think you kind of like there's a scene early on where she's talking to Pete Davidson's character, and like I was just like, I could eat this up. These two characters talking was so much fun to watch. What do you think about Pete Davidson in this film?
I mean, Pete Davidson pretty much in everything plays Pete Davidson. Yeah. But I mean, he plays Pete Davidson everything really well.
Yeah.
I think this is probably my second favorite performance from him other than The King of Staten Island. So I think he does it really well for what he gets to do here.
Yeah, I agree. And I have not seen King of Staten Island, but he's held such an interesting place in the culture as well. Like, you know, having recently broken up with Kim Kardashian and all of that. Yeah, so there's that aspect. I want to talk more about him, but we'll save it for spoilers. But I have a couple more thoughts about him. But yeah, generally, I thought he's
really carving himself like an interesting path post SNL.
Yeah, absolutely. And this was... yeah, in a way unexpected, but also in a way like such a perfect role for him. You know, he did it really well. And you know who else I was really impressed with that I've not seen in anything, I don't believe, is Mahala Harold as Jordan. She really brings a unique energy to the group. It's interesting because you kind of are thrown into this group and you don't really have a great sense of all the characters at first, just like B's character is. She's kind of thrown into it. And Jordan is a character that you kind of she's kind of intense, right? And I think that's kind of what helps her to stand out in a way that and I just think that performance really did that well. And you almost, even right at the beginning, you almost fear her a little bit because she seems just a little bit more intimidating or something. But yeah,
her and Amanda Stenberg really play off the animosity they have for each other really well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and that's interesting too. I think the script does a good job of sort of teasing those things, and then there as things go on, you learn more and it builds those things. So yeah, I think it's just a really good script as far as how we learn certain information, which I guess is another like whodunit thing. Like it's very important when you learn certain things. And then the other characters, Chase Wee Wonders as Emma, she's probably like the smallest role. I think she does a good job what she's doing. And then also Lee Pace as Greg. And he's a really interesting one too. I think it's funny to have like this older guy there. And yeah, for what that character is, I think Lee Pace does a really good job as well. So
I think Emma's kind of probably the most underwritten character. So she doesn't really get much to do in terms of like standing out amongst all these other like huge personalities.
Yeah, that's really true. I think what she does is really good, but yeah, it's probably more on the script level that she doesn't quite have as much to do. Although she has, I think probably the best, her best acting moment or like most memorable for me is there's a confrontation early on when they're playing the game between her and Pete Davidson. And that scene, I think, is so hard to watch in a good way. Like that's really well done on the script level and a performance level. Yeah, it's so interesting how like they set up different animosities between all these different characters, and so then of course we have the whodunit aspect could go any direction almost. Yeah, so that's, I think that's a good way to do it. Well, I'm trying to think, are there any other non-spoilery thoughts we want to get out before we drop our spoiler warning and talk about some more of the details of it?
I think the choice to like film like 80% of the movie in complete darkness with the only lighting being the flashlights, I think that's very interesting to keep up with the, like, you don't know really what's going on around and kind of keep the, I don't know, dizziness of the audience.
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't expect that. I don't know if I just missed that in the trailers, that this was like a hurricane. There's a hurricane coming, the storm part of it. But when the power went out and then it's dark for like most of the movie after that, I was a little surprised by that. But yeah, then, and then like the phone lights, it is its own unique like visual thing. I think the cinematography is really solid in this movie. Because even in all that darkness, you never get too lost with, like, sometimes in a dark movie, it can be like unsettling and disorienting in a way. And this is to some degree, but like on purpose, you can tell it's, I never like lost track of what I was supposed to be able to see, I guess. But yeah, the fact that it's phones too is such a, it's part of the satire, which I think is the next thing we're going to talk about, is having these phones all the time. Like they're always texting, and they're, of course, so much of Gen Z and I guess younger millennials, depending on, you know, how old everyone is, that the cell phone and like living your life digitally is such a part of that. And so, yeah, bringing in so much cell phone light and as you mentioned, the glow sticks as well.
I think it's interesting.
Good.
It's interesting that even though the power is out, the Wi-Fi is out, they have no connection, they're still on their phones.
They can't use their phones,
but they still have their phones in their hands.
And there's a big pile of flashlights and batteries on the table when we first see B walk in, but they're not using those. They just use their phones. Yeah, so funny. Well, I think now is a good time then to get into some spoilers. So if you have not watched Bodies, 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 it sounds like generally we both recommend it. Check it out at the theater. It's in wide release now. Go watch it and then come back. Okay, spoiler warning over. We're not going to talk about everything in the movie, including the ending. So I wanted to talk about the satire elements of this and like sort of the comedy of it, but some of that, and we could have done that pre-spoiler warning, but I don't know, some of that gets into like the film's ending, and I was like, well, let's just save that for the spoiler talk. So satirically and comedically, how well did Body Bodies Bodies work for you?
I think it's definitely hitting at Gen Z, which I'm Gen Z, so that's a little bit relatable. I think specifically more like privileged upper class Gen Zs. And kind of like tackling like Twitter culture, because there's a lot of stuff like, you're canceling me, you're silencing me, you're gaslighting me, you're toxic. Those kind of languages are all throughout this film. And it's definitely kind of just like how Gen Z is kind of eating each other alive of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and it was interesting. So I didn't know exactly the age group that it was kind of targeting, I guess, with its satire, but it is pretty much Gen Z. So I'm a millennial, kind of a younger millennial, I guess. But so I think like some of that is lumped in a little bit. But yeah, it's the Gen Z, the way they're speaking to each other. And yeah, like it hits all those, you know, we care about mental health and I have a podcast, and like all those things are I think work really well. There's just a few moments in the film where I felt like they pushed it a little too far, where it didn't quite feel as organic. I think it's in that scene. I'm trying to remember exactly. So there's the scene with the gun, but just before that, there's also a big confrontation. No, I think it is the same scene. It's the same scene with the gun. That's right. And they're kind of standing around a fireplace. And that's when Alice is there and Jordan and B and Sophie. And that's a really important scene, and I think 90% of it is great. There's a couple moments where it's like, okay, now we're kind of just listing buzzwords a little bit, and when she's like, I'm triggered by you, I'm enabled by you, and it's those. So yeah, again, like 95% of the satire I think worked really well, but then I felt in just a few moments that the script could have been just a touch tighter, and maybe cut a couple of those and it would have been a little bit better. But yeah, in general, I think it's really good. And to sort of, as I was kind of thinking after, like, what is, if there's like a general statement, or at least what am I getting out of it? It's kind of like this culture of this generation is at least on the surface is more sort of kind and caring and like, okay, we care about mental health. We care about, you know, not triggering one another, like all those things, all these buzzwords that we're using, those things kind of exist to, in general, live more harmoniously with one another. But even amidst all that, this, you know, this culture that's supposed to be kinder to each other, you can weaponize those things and still be terrible to each other. And that's kind of what we see in the movie. And I think you're right. I was going to say that too, about it's kind of the more upper class. Like they even have a conversation about, well, we're all rich. And like, maybe the only exception is B, who doesn't, again, like doesn't really belong with in this world that she's unfamiliar with. But they, that's a really funny line. Actually, I'm just remembering where it's like, I'm not rich. She's like, your parents are upper middle class. And like, that's like a diss almost. It's like they teach at a college. Like, of course they have money.
It's public.
Yeah, that's right. It's public. That's where that goes. Oh, that's so funny. Yeah. So like the writing of those kind of moments, I think is so good. Like that was genuinely hilarious. And in my audience that I was with at the theater was really eating that stuff up too. So that was...
I unfortunately only had like two people in my theater, two other people in my theater. So I didn't really have a crowded audience to see it.
Yeah. Yeah. It was interesting to hear. I'm always a little curious, like, are people going to be, you know, gasping at the scary things or like whatever. And my audience was pretty into it. It wasn't a huge audience. I think maybe like 30 people or something, but that's bigger than most of the time when I go to the movies. Yeah. So I liked all the satirical stuff in it. Yeah. Let's see where to go else here. So what do you think about the ending? I guess that kind of what do you think about the ending and that kind of what we learn about Pete Davidson's death?
Yeah, so basically the ending is no one really killed Pete Davidson. It was just he was an idiot doing a TikTok and trying to do what Greg did earlier in the film with the champagne bottle and his dad's sword, and then he accidentally just goes like cuts his neck off.
Splices himself up. Yeah.
And it's like all of this freaking out was for nothing.
Yeah. I love that ending. I think it was surprising, and there was as I'm, you know, questioning each person's motive and having different moments, oh, maybe they did it. I did have the thought like, well, what if no one did it? What if this was an accident? Or what if he killed himself on purpose? Or like, I was thinking through like, what are the different possibilities there?
There was a moment there. I was thinking like, maybe Pete Davidson faked his death, like put fake blood over himself. Kind of like how Greg faked his death at the beginning when he, when he killed during the game.
Yeah. I didn't think of that. Yeah.
So I was thinking that might be it. And I was thinking like, I can see it being everyone, but also no one at the same time. And it's really hard to figure it out. And then that kind of like, oh.
Yeah. It's kind of the perfect thing too. Cause then you find out, of course, this has all been a witch hunt and like no one was guilty and how quickly they could turn on each other. Well, again, having this, you know, living in this, you know, more enlightened modern era where we care more about each other's mental health and yet we can still turn on each other to the point of murdering each other. Yeah.
The only one that ever actually kills anyone was B, killing Greg.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is like the one person that at least me like kind of identifying with, you know, I think that's interesting. Like the one person that you're supposed to sort of root for maybe is the only person who actually killed anyone. Yeah. That's a great surprise. As soon as they picked up his phone, I was like, oh, I think that it is that no one killed him. Like this is a thing that, some sort of accident happened. And the fact that he was just trying to do the sword thing is hilarious. And the fact that it's Pete Davidson, the thing I was going to say before spoiler talks that I decided to say was just that when I saw the trailer, I was like, I wonder if Pete Davidson dies first. Like I just had the feeling just because, you know, he's the biggest name for one thing. And like he probably didn't have as many days to shoot or whatever. So they probably didn't have as much time with him, but also there's just something I don't dislike him, but there's also something really enjoyable about watching him die. I don't know why, like something sort of cathartic about the fact that Pete Davidson, and just funny, like we have Pete Davidson here and he's going to be the first one to die a brutal death. But yeah.
I think what I saw most online is people thinking Pete Davidson was going to be the killer. Mm-hmm. And then I think like when I was going in, I thought Greg was going to be the first one to die. He's like barely in the trailers at all.
Yeah, yeah.
And then when they have that fake out where he's lying on the floor after Jordan tags him from Bodies, Bodies, Bodies. And then I was like, oh, he's actually dead in the scene. But I think that marketing really well, trying to like throw you off at who's the first to die.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I don't even think I saw Greg in the trailers at all.
Yeah, I don't know that I did either. or at least he, I think maybe there's one shot of him underwater, but I can't really tell who anyone is in those moments. Then I was looking back at the trailer earlier, but yeah, I think there's also a line that was in the trailers where Pete Davidson's saying something like, it would be so obvious if I was the killer. And, you know, it works on the level of the game, but also in real life, of course, too. Or, you know, real life within the movie. But yeah, I thought the ending worked really, really nicely and sort of a nice punctuation mark on the satire that we have. You know, it was TikTok that killed him, essentially, like his own stupidity, but also he was on his phone being an idiot and died that way.
Poor Max coming back to all his friends being dead.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, and that was the other thing too, is that they mentioned him. I was like, is he somehow orchestrating this? And he had a motive, it turned out, against Pete Davidson as well. And yeah, so I thought that worked too, to have this sort of presence looming who ended up being completely innocuous. It was like, what in the world happened? Yeah. Well, did you have any other kind of favorite moments, favorite jokes, anything in the film that you wanted to bring up?
I would love to go back and like rewatch the scene where they're playing Bodies, Bodies, Bodies and accusing each other. I would love to see if there's like any kind of like hints there I might have missed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So we mentioned earlier the kind of confrontation between Pete Davidson's David and Emma, his girlfriend, and they it gets so real where she apparently has talked about their sex life with the other girls and he's so mad about that, and then he goes off on this rant about how the word gaslighting doesn't mean anything anymore. Yeah, that scene was I think really well written and well performed as well. The only other thing I wanted to mention was the hilarious misunderstanding around the word vet, because they find out, oh, he's a vet, and then they just kind of run with that. He's been in Iraq or Afghanistan or wherever, so of course he's violent, of course he's the killer, and he has his knife in his backpack and all of this. Like, he's a veterinarian's assistant. He works with animals, and he's so we have this one idea of him, but he's actually like really zen, and like we meet him in the gym and he's just listening to music and like doing some sort of meditation. So he's actually this like kind of woo-woo hippie kind of guy, and we murdered him. So how sad.
That's such a huge house, having like a gym in there.
Oh my god.
And then in the beginning where David and Sophie are going to like, I guess, David's dad's like office room, it feels like they're going like deep into a hall, down like a bunch of hallways. Like, how big is this house?
Yeah, and you never really get a great sense of that, which is another thing that probably works on the sort of the mystery level of like, and kind of with the cinematography to keep you guessing about, we don't really know, we don't have a great sense of the layout. So it's, you don't really know, like, this person's about to come around the corner, because we don't really understand the building that well. So like, there's a scene where Alice is kind of stumbling through the dark and she's so upset because people are dying. And then she just kind of trips over Emma's body. And I didn't even know she was near the stairwell, right? And then we found out, and then you find out later that she probably just tripped down the stairs. But yeah, I think that the setting was used really well in that way as well. Yeah.
I do kind of wish the house kind of had more of a personality to it, kind of like Clue or Knives Out, where like each room kind of has this distinct, where you know all this stuff. Like by the end, you kind of like know each room. I kind of wish it would have been more. In that kind of like all these specific rooms, and that's just not just kind of like generic kind of confusing house.
Yeah, that's true. I just thought it too about when Alice dies. So she's been wearing these the glow sticks that you mentioned, like as a necklace and as bracelets, and that provides a lot of light for some of the scenes. But when she finally dies in sort of a scuffle over the gun, one of them kind of falls and it looks like a halo. I thought that was a kind of a cool visual touch.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
She's sort of angelic in that moment, or saintly or something. And because I think she's the first person, maybe this is not true, I'd have to rewatch it, but it seemed like she has her issues, right? But she's more or less kind of innocent. Like, she hasn't been in a lot of the big fights where she's like doing drugs and whatever else. But so maybe I'd have to rewatch to see if that theory holds water. But And maybe I am reading too much into that. Maybe it wasn't an intentional visual thing, but I kind of noticed as like, oh, she looks like, you know, Mother Mary or something with this halo behind her. But of course, it's like blood because she's just been shot. But anyway,
I think this movie has like a ton of rewatchability factors to it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, I think I could like it even more on a rewatch. potentially.
I think so too, because even if you know the ending, it actually only makes it, you know, more interesting to see, you know, some of the setups of it, and the, I think the jokes are such that they'll still be funny on a rewatch as well.
Could be even funnier because just like now you know all of this is kind of for nothing. It's kind of just overblown.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And the satire might come through even more strongly that way. Yeah. Well, cool. Thank you so much, Jordan, for joining us. This has been a great conversation. That's Bodies, Bodies, Bodies. See it in theaters now, and I'm sure it will be on VOD before too long. But yeah, this has been great. Yeah, again, I want to have you back at least for Knives Out 2. I don't think they've quite announced the release date on that, but sometime this year that's supposed
to be. It said holiday season on that.
Yeah, okay.
Title announcement thing. So.
So.
November, December,
November, probably. December, something like that. Yes, definitely back for that, and maybe before that as well. Love to have you back on the show. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
Huge thanks to Jordan Woodson for coming on the show today. I was so thrilled to learn that Jordan's a huge fan of whodunits. I couldn't have picked a better guest for this film. Coming up on the show, I will continue my series on the French New Wave with Omaya Jones. On the next one, we're talking about The Left Bank. What is the left bank within the French New Wave movement? Who are the directors associated with that? And we're going to look at a film by Agnès Varda called One Sings, the Other Doesn't. In addition to a short film called La Jetée, which Omaya says is the greatest short film of all time. So the hype couldn't be any higher. I'm excited to check that one out soon and talk about it with Omaya on next week's show. And with that, thank you for listening to Art House Garage. We've got a few years worth of episodes. You can hear all of those in your podcast app of choice. Our theme music is by composer Paul Hunefeld. Learn more at appallingproductions.com. If you want to support Art House Garage, become a patron over at patreon.com/arthousegarage or find a link in the show notes. You can also buy an Art House Garage t-shirt at arthousegarage.com/shop. If you want to support us without spending any money, leave a rating or review in your podcast app, and that is hugely helpful. Stay in the loop about Art House Garage and the films we're covering by subscribing to our email newsletter. That's at arthousegarage.com/subscribe, or you can email me directly, andrew@arthousegarage.com. And of course, follow on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd. Just search at Art House Garage in all those places, or find links in the show notes. And that will do it for this episode. Thank you again so much for listening. And until next time, keep it snob free.